The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
So we made it through tax day. And of course for me, if you look at my bio, you can tell that I have a tax specialization. But tax day happened and a riot ensued. No one was really angry that they had to pay taxes and just started rioting. No one was angered that they didn't get the refund that they wanted. No one was angered that if they did get a refund, it was money returned to the taxpayer with absolutely no interest. They held your money for a long period of time and gave it to you with nothing to show for it except for the flat principal. The fact that if you calculated the amount of your refund, you'd realize a hard fact. The amount of the money that you paid back when the payment was received would have yielded more money had that amount been invested in an investment vehicle with a small nominal rate of return from the very beginning. Not to mention when they take it from you, they blow it on things like studying mountain lions on treadmills. Then they return a portion of what they took from you that supersedes the amount that you were required to pay. And they do this with absolutely zero interest months later. No, this isn't a gift by dear leader in the benevolent government because you've tithed to the First National Church of Gov's infrastructure project. This was money that you had to give to the United States government. That's the time value of money. They need to teach that, but I digress. So the Antifa riots are back again, and we've talked about those on various other shows in the past, but the Antifa, they are self-proclaimed anti-fascist, even though I can make the case that they supported a completely fascistic regime, the most fascistic administration since Woodrow Wilson via the Obama presidency. And this is actually kind of funny from the Urban Dictionary. They have an excellent definition somebody put up there. It says, quote, middle-class, champagne socialist, communist, anarchist white boys who do not like nationalist or fascist. They consider themselves to be rebelling against the establishment whilst upholding all of their ultra-politically correct views. Antifa only dislike racism when it's carried out by whites and do not have the bottle to stand up against anti-white racism, leading to many people on the right to refer to them as traitors. I'd rather just call them morons. Most are teenagers and university students who grow out of the fad when they start paying taxes. Antifa is stupid. That's from the Urban Dictionary. But, you know, we get the usual violence, so it's not a protest. It's a freaking riot. We get violence, we get injury, we get bodily harm. You know, those things didn't happen with the Tea Party movement, but they're happening with Antifa. You know, this is Occupy Wall Street 2.0. And basically, we get the usual dregs of Hollywood, like Rob Reiner, Meathead, and his little tweets. And Sarah Silverman, you know, she used to be somewhat funny back in the 1990s on a few episodes of Mr. Show on HBO, the sketch comedy show with Bob Odenkirk, David Cross, Jack Black, Brian Posehn. I mean, I could just roll out other names of good comedic talents that were involved in that show. But now she's just, after a barrage of vitriolic comedy specials and series on Comedy Central, she's just a miserable, shrill woman, similar to that of a poor woman's Janine Garofalo. And she was out there clamoring for Trump to release his taxes.
Who has no currency? It's also kind of all we have. So show us your f***ing taxes, you emotional child. You like being a superficial bully? Here's one for you. You are a 3 at best. Thank you.
And you see, that's the thing with Hollywood. I mean, that's the thing with this whole riot, too. But Hollywood wants to make the case that the culture should be really upset. You know, the public at large, the low information voter, the ones that form their public opinion based off the views that are held by Hollywood on People magazine and on TMZ and whatever is collectively the right thing to do with a number of Hollywood stars means that you or I should just go ahead and back it. Those people are always out there making the noise, and they're doing so now over taxes. So on tax day, these riots just start breaking out all over the country spontaneously. Yeah, they just happen. Oh, taxes. I've got to file my... Trump didn't turn his taxes in. Let's go out to downtown and start raiding the place. You know, let's go beat up some Trump supporters, or who we think are Trump supporters, because they actually don't even know who Trump supporters are. I get mistaken as a Trump supporter online all the time. And when I tell them that I didn't even vote for him, it kind of just disarms their entire argument. But anyways, like I said, Trump has done some things I've been happy with, some things I haven't been happy with, so we can go off on that tangent later. But the usual Hollywood tastemakers, you know, the ones that think that if they get out there and say something, everybody's going to get behind it, have joined up with the rich billionaire activist, those like George Soros, who was willing to actively collapse the currencies of nations. Keep in mind, these are the liberals that everybody's supposed to say. They are so compassionate. But they also say, well, you know, you got to break a few eggs. Yeah, never mind the fact that this guy collapsed currencies of nations, destroying economies, raining hell on the poor and middle class citizens of those countries without even batting an eye of compassion. Well, we just had to do it. Yep, never mind that they're all clamoring for something to eat. They're probably eating their dogs. I mean, who really cares? Because the greater good, you know, the greater good gets helped. And the other nonprofit anti-capitalist chaos conduits, where they funnel money through these nonprofit organizations that are built solely to disrupt and destroy democracy and republicanism, they all got together to create these spontaneous grassroots protests. It's going to look like a grassroots effort, and it's not. And after 8 years of community organizing from the White House and grooming their army of lemmings from universities via boot camp called higher education, where tenured professors are looked at as brilliant, astute minds, and they completely shape the worldview of the kids that are going to these schools with insane ideologies with no threat of removal. And the kids, the ones that go there, they actively hang their tapestries of Bob Marley and Jerry Garcia and, that's right, Che Guevara in their pot smoke filled infused dorm rooms, who think that they're away from the tyranny of their parents. Since they're away from that tyranny, they must give in to the tyranny of collectivization and safe spaces. If you really had a question as to what's going on in academia, go on Conservative Library and check out 5 Ridiculous Things Offending Liberals Today, and you'll see it. Rice University is doing away with its title of master for the heads of its residential colleges. Why, you may ask? Because the term signified those in charge during slavery in America. Now, my comment was, so now, maybe they'll even change the master's degree to a magister's degree, since that's what they're changing the master's name to, magister's. Then your magister's degree in German fashion design will be even more worthless than one from those colleges that advertise on daytime soaps like Young and the Restless and maybe Maury Povich. And then another story that we read, teachers should stop requiring standard English from minorities because it's too oppressive. Yeah, learning the language and enunciating correctly and using the right terminology is oppressive. Just let everybody go out and just speak however they want. No class. I mean, this is only 2017, you know, 2016's little brother. I mean, can it get any worse? And of course, the Villanueva students, the combat students, they shave their head to fight hair privilege, oppressive gender norms. You know, I know a lot of bald people out there that wish they had their hair privilege back. And I'm sorry, Pumpkin, but Sinead O'Connor already blazed that trail before your 15 seconds of fame began. And then, of course, you've got the leftist organizations, the magazines. They buy into this whole thing. Mother Jones, editor-in-chief, frets about Tomahawk missiles might offend the Native Americans. Oh my gosh. How about we change the Tomahawk missiles' names to the Gay Blades? And the news can go, breaking this morning, Assad was attacked by 50 gay blades. Nah, the G and LGBT will probably be against that idea. Of course, the G stands for gay, so me using gay in the form of gay blades shouldn't be offensive. So I'm going to put that out there as a disclaimer for safe space intrusion. clarification purposes. But it seems it's going to take a longer amount of time to rename these daggone missiles than to actually shoot them off the launch pad. So it's back to the drawing board. And then, of course, witches. Angry witches have declared war on cultural appropriation. I mean, seriously? They say magic is not for white people. Well, you know what? You can keep your magic. Because you can clearly see there aren't any wires or pulleys fastened to the suck that is magic. I mean, when you see somebody do a magic trick, your reaction is basically, oh, wow, that's cool. That's it. There's nothing amazing about magic. And so does this make David Copperfield magic's Elvis? You know, Chuck Berry and all them out there, they didn't get the credit. You know, David Blaine, and he didn't get the credit, but David Copperfield appropriated the magic style. And because he's the white guy, he gets all the credit. I mean, it's ridiculous. And we have to think this is what's happening that's causing everything to happen. You know, you're going to have these protests. You're going to have these Bernie Sanders collectives. You're going to have these entitled snowflakes storming areas because they have been programmed to do so. They are the foot soldiers for the movement of Soros and Hollywood and the Democrat Party. More on the other side of the break. I'm Adrian Slade.
This is Adrian Slade.
Adrian Slade broadcast.
So what do we actually know about the foot soldiers of this movement? The ones that show up looking like ISIS fighters, dressed in black, showing up at every Berkeley event, causing chaos, burning and looting and destroying property. Well, a lot of people call them the Black Bloc, but what they don't realize is the Black Bloc isn't an organization, it's a method. And this comes from a dispatch that I was reading. Inner dispatch from the anti-fascist, anti-capitalist Black Bloc that protested Trump's inauguration. Writer Nasha Leonard aptly described the Black Bloc as not a group, but an anarchist tactic. Marching as a conventional united force, uniformed in black and anonymized for security. Once deployed, the tactic has an alchemic quality, turning into a temporary object, the Black Bloc. Indeed, the Black Bloc is not a political group or sets of views, but a protest method used by anarchists. The uniform, Leonard mentions, is a key part of making the Bloc work as well and as often as it does. The name implies the people who form a Black Bloc dress entirely in black from head to toe. Much of the time, Black Bloc actors will cover their faces using black bandanas or face masks and sunglasses. An all-black uniform keeps everyone in the group anonymous. As the world saw on Inauguration Day, people with Black Bloc will sometimes emerge from the tight block formation to destroy private or corporate property. Remember, they destroyed a Starbucks, who is, oddly enough, on their side. But anyways, an active protest that is entirely illegal. But when everyone looks the same, it's harder to tell who stayed in the streets and who whipped out a hammer and started smashing windows or burned somebody's limo that he'll never receive insurance settlements for. There's safety in the anonymity of the Black Bloc and certainly an intense sense of pride and power that comes with amassing in uniform. Yeah, together we can lockstep together and destroy things. Maybe we can goose step and be a part of a regime. But anyways, back to the article. Some Black Bloc members will show up with hammers, bricks, rocks, and other such items that are relatively easy to conceal and yet capable of doing hefty damage. Lighters and flares are also usually on hand for setting things on fire and drawing attention to the group. Depending on the specific protest, this disruption and distraction that Black Blocs cause can be just as important to the mission of the action as the damage the group leaves in its wake. Now, we covered this back on our Black Lives Matter podcast. This is before we went to air with Red Nation Rising Radio. This isn't some organic movement. This isn't some out-of-work group that are just fed up with corporate America and they're fed up with Donald Trump, because it wouldn't matter if it was Ted Cruz, President Rubio, President Kasich, President Heb Bush. It would not matter whoever was in office. This crap would still be going on because we are at the teetering point of Soros destroying America through the Obama administration. We have 8 years of implanting the mission And that's what's happening in Hungary right now, which it's being fought against. Soros is actively funding protests in Hungary, where Hungary is actually pushing back on Soros as the one country that is fighting against him the most. I mean, Soros, like I said earlier, destroyed economies and ruined nations' currencies. So his plan to globalize is in steps. He's a part of this Syrian refugee program. Open Society Foundation is a part of that. And we can go back into that. And we may go back into more Syria information on another show coming up soon, especially based on everything that's going on. But we also have to realize that this funding is coming from creative ways for people to not really be privy to it. People won't be able to figure out where the money is coming from. They'll just think that these organizations are just spontaneous and that people have all day to go out there and protest and break things and not have to worry about putting food on their table, which couldn't be further from the truth. So with Black Bloc, who actually uses the methods of Black Bloc? That would be Crimeth Inc., C-R-I-M-E-T-H-I-N-C. Go look them up. This is from their website. On January 20th, 2001, anarchists nearly stopped the inauguration of George W. Bush. Although there was considerable anger about Bush winning the election while losing the popular vote, the Washington, D.C. police hoped it would have been easy to confine protesters to free speech zones. In contrast, anarchists had to decide to disrupt the inauguration by attempting actively to block Bush's motorcade from the Capitol, the White House. Passive protest groups compiled with police orders, leaving the anarchists out in the cold. An anarchist Black Bloc, a few hundred strong, had formed, but most had no idea how to get through the police barricades between the protesters and free speech zones and the bleachers of those who had paid to cheer Bush into the presidency. However, one affinity group had a bright idea. Out of nowhere, four black-masked anarchists, clad in Carhartt clothing, popular among train-hopping traveler kids of the time, appeared at the edge of the block. Clearly, they had scouted the area beforehand. The affinity group seized a rolling dumpster from a nearby construction site and asked the assorted anarchists to pile in whatever construction supplies that were nearby, chiefly poles and other garbage. One, two, three, go! The affinity group shouted, with more than 100 of somewhat surprised anarchists behind them. In an almost superhuman effort, they pushed the dumpster straight in the line of police checking IDs to enter the free speech zone. The police maintaining the checkpoint fled in horror, and relatively fragile barrier separating the free speech zone from the Black Bloc was smashed. Anarchists in black masks penetrated the zone right next to the bleachers and the parade route without the police succeeding in checking their identities. In a moment of insane courage, affinity group continued to rush forward towards the dumpster, releasing it straight into the parade route. However, one quick-witted police officer drove his car straight into the dumpster's path and blocking it. The affinity group scattered, melting back into the crowd. Although Bush's inauguration itself was not disrupted, the free speech zone and area near the route descended into chaos at that moment, and Bush's motorcade was far quietly interrupted. Crimeth Inc. operatives carried out few other creative direct actions based in affinity groups. One group set up a pirate radio station to broadcast an anarchist critique of democracy, while others throughout D.C. encouraged residents to get out in the streets, distributing thousands of flyers urging people to tune into the pirate radio station for an emergency message. What can we learn from 2001? Well, let's review a few fundamental principles of successful direct action from the mass mobilizations against capitalist globalization and the Iraq War. Number one, the most important thing is to play your position. Before we get into principles, let's take a look at the protagonist of these mobilizations. The participants in these actions can be divided broadly into organizers from the host city and the people coming out of the town. It is essential that those arriving from the town already be organized in affinity groups so that they are prepared to make decisions and act autonomously throughout the events. The local organizers are the people who, by lucky chance of living in a city like Washington, D.C. during Trump's inauguration, have been given the honor of doing a lot of organizational work to make the direct action a success. Often, this is an overwhelming task, and it's generally appreciated if people from out of town arrive early to help. As local organizers are the ones most likely to have their houses raided after a protest, they may delegate some of the action-oriented work to people who are from out of town who can easily evade detection and escape police. So, I mean, it goes on. I mean, there's a ton of other bullet points on how that they go around disrupting organizations and like the World Trade Organization demonstrations in 1999. That was one of their successes. And they tell you the methods, the principles behind how to do it, which is amazing to me, especially when you get into the funding side of this entire organization or this entire movement. And we're going to get into the breakdown of the funding on the other side of the break. Stick with me.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Take your mask off, man.
No hoodies, no mask. No hoodies, no mask.
Back off.
You can take. Come here.
You want to
take your mask off?
Come here.
Your old
camera. Come on.
We haven't done anything.
Take your mask off.
Is that simple?
Take your mask off.
You can go in,
or you'll be arrested for ordering.
Yes, sir.
Your choice. You want to go to jail for ordering, or you want to take your mask off?
Take your mask off and go in. Okay.
Get your pole.
How did that KRS-One song go years ago? Whoop. Whoop, that's the sound of the police unmasking Antifa or Antifa protesters. So the police were catching them on the way in, taking their mask off, unmasking the Crimeth Inc. Antifa protesters who are gearing up for their black bloc methods that we talked about earlier. So we know the foot soldiers are paid. What's even more ridiculous is that the city of Berkeley issued a protest 101 checklist. Listen to this. First, contact the police department and provide, number one, purpose of protest. We hate Donald Trump and we hate capitalism and republicanism. I guess that's how it would have gone. Number two, dates and time of event, location, route of march if planned, estimated attendance, organizing person or group, number of organizers, how to identify and contact organizers, monitors at this event, whether it's hats or shirts or armbands or black mask and bottles and sticks and whatever going on. What will they be wearing? Will they have mobile phones? And my favorite part, do you want symbolic arrest? If so, where and when? Yeah, come and arrest me so I can film it and it won't even be a real arrest and we can put it out there as propaganda. Why not? You know, the last time I was ever symbolically arrested was when Amber showed up at the bachelor party as a police officer. Of course, the wife didn't like that too much, but that's a joke. Just go with me on that. But anyways, that is a ridiculous checklist of what is going on with Berkeley. But Berkeley has had a history of that kind of craziness. You know, Berkeley has had a history of protest going back to the 60s. One of the things I thought was an interesting definition was they've all said that they are a direct action group. And what is direct action? Direct action is when you take a collective action to make social change without giving power over to an authority or a middle person. We don't ask permission to put our faith in electoral politics. Instead, we use our bodies to stop the smooth operation of the system we oppose. Examples of direct action include the ongoing resistance at Standing Rock against the Dakota Access Pipeline, the street and highway blockades of Black Lives Matter, or the occupations of public squares during Occupy Wall Street. And that's the interesting thing to me, is it's a decentralized protest movement. But there is a centralization to it, whether they want to agree with that or not. So who actually funds them? They have to have some sort of funding, some sort of foundation and infrastructure for them to even do what they're doing. And they claim on their website they don't accept money from George Soros. Yeah, they don't have his wrinkly hands handing them the money. But there is an indirect conduit of funding that lands into the support apparatus of Crimeth Inc. and those violent protesters. It's Democracy Alliance. This from LifeSite News. But Matthew Vadim, senior vice president at the Washington-based Capital Research Center, said he found an indirect link with hedge fund manager and liberal philanthropist George Soros. Quote, George Soros is a major funder of Alliance for Global Justice, a radical left-wing group that collected donations on behalf of Occupy Wall Street movement, Vadim told the Daily Signal, adding, Alliance for Global Justice is now functioning as a fiscal sponsor for a group called Refuse Fascism that is heavily involved in the Disrupt J20 effort of the inauguration. A fiscal sponsor accepts donations on behalf of unincorporated or small groups and charges a modest administrative fee so that donors can conduct and deduct donations from their taxes. Democracy Alliance is the umbrella group of all of these small groups. Remember, when the left speaks of democracy, it's not the same democracy that we think. When we think of democracy, we think of republicanism. You know, we think of freedom and a democratic vote, but we also put it through an electoral college, and we put it through the states to have individual presidential state elections all compiled on the same day. Whereas the left looks at it as just a popular vote, which always leads to authoritarianism. But continuing, the Democracy Alliance, they are the meeting place and the financial hub of all of the resistance, not just what's happening in Berkeley, but what's happening right now with Bill O'Reilly and Fox News. Now, I'm not one to go out and start talking about other news hosts, but there's two in the news that I need to cover, you know, especially today, that because it's newsworthy. And Glenn Beck has actually made the case that Bill O'Reilly is being smeared through a smear campaign that is organized to attack advertisers and to effectively push him out of his position with Fox News. And he provided an email from Mary Pat Bonner saying, "O'Reilly update call. Can you join?" And here's the email. "For years, Bill O'Reilly has been one of the worst purveyors of misinformation on Fox News, a serial misinformer pushing many of the most extreme sexist, racist, homophobic, and xenophobic," you know, all of the phobics are listed right there, "conservative theories on TV. Additionally, a recent bombshell New York Times investigation found Fox News and also found Bill O'Reilly had paid $13 million to settle with five women who accused the hosts of repeated sexual harassment or verbal abuse. Thanks to Media Matters," keep that in mind, "O'Reilly and Fox News are being held accountable. Due to our advertiser education campaign, over 80 advertisers have currently dropped O'Reilly's show, and the momentum continues to build. We are currently at a critical juncture in this campaign. I hope you can join Media Matters President Alonzo Corazon to hear about the success of the campaign so far and our plans moving forward." And they go on to give the dates and times for upcoming meetings. Now, the reason why I bring that up is because it dovetails into what's happening with Democracy Alliance. One of the organizations that Beck said attacked him when he was at Fox News was Color for Change. Well, Color for Change is a group that is being funded, along with a dozen other groups, by Democracy Alliance, who is the hub. And Democracy Alliance is a donor network founded in 2005, raises $50 to $60 million a year for progressive causes. And here's a clip from Politico on a meeting. "George Soros and other rich liberals who spent tens of millions of dollars trying to elect Hillary Clinton are gathering in Washington for a three-day closed-door meeting to retool the big money left to fight back against Donald Trump. The conference, which kicked off on Sunday night at Washington's pricey Mandarin Oriental Hotel, is sponsored by the influential Democracy Alliance Donors Club and will include appearances by leaders of the most leading unions and liberal groups, as well as the darlings of the left, such as the House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi, Senator Elizabeth Warren, and Congressional Progressive Caucus co-chairman Keith Ellison," or Keith X, as I like to call him, his stage name. "Some sessions deal with gearing up for 2017 and 2018 elections, while others focus on thwarting President-elect Trump's 100-day plan, which the agenda calls, quote, a terrifying assault on President Obama's achievements and our progressive vision for an equitable and just nation. Yet the meetings come as many liberals are reassessing their approach to politics and their role of Democracy Alliance, a club that is known for democratic financial circles." Now, that's one of the things you want to keep in mind is the list of players who are involved. One of the leaders of Democracy Alliance is Gara LaMarche, and Michelle Malkin wrote about this in Town Hall regarding him. Quote, "Philip Gara LaMarche is a secretive political operative who funnels billions of dollars from undisclosed donors to nonprofits and astroturf groups. LaMarche is a militant leftist philanthropist. He has protected elite, Columbia University grad, former ACLU leader and Human Rights Watch official with ready access to the White House. He and the left's other dark money managers preach transparency and openness while plotting against and behind closed doors to secure power at every level of government. LaMarche currently heads the shadowy Democracy Alliance. In internal documents obtained and published this month by John Hinderaker of the Powerline blog, the group currently describes itself as, quote, the center of gravity for the progressive funding world. DA enrolls wealthy liberal members who coordinate and finance a web of at least 132 left-wing groups. Though some of their members and partners' identities have been exposed, Democracy Alliance takes great care to promise a cloak of donor secrecy, quote, to provide a comfortable environment for our partners to collectively make a real impact. While they bash Wall Street publicly, DA leaders have quietly recruited venture capitalists, bankers, hedge fund moguls, along with union bosses and red diaper trust fund babies to fund their takeover goals. Public school educators who belong to the American Federation of Teachers, headed by $500,000-plus yearly salary president Randy Wirtgen, should know that $230,000 of their hard-earned union dues goes to Democracy Alliance, as Lachlan Markey of the Washington Free Beacon has reported. Over the last 9 years, the organization brags to potential contributors. DA has aligned leaders in the progressive movement and political infrastructure to achieve victories at the ballot box and in policy fights. Their agenda spans social justice, climate change, voting rights, gun control, illegal alien amnesty, campaign finance, and sustained strategic investment to turn red states blue. That's exactly what DA members Jared Polis and Tim Gill succeeded in doing in once GOP-dominated Colorado in 2008. LaMarche previously served as president and CEO of the Atlantic Philanthropies. As Michelle Malkin first reported 5 years ago, that entity was a Bermuda-based political front stocked with acolytes of progressive billionaire George Soros. Let me go down further here. The Tides Center and its parent organization, the Tides Foundation, in turn have seeded some of the country's most radical activist groups on the left, including the communist-friendly United for Peace and Justice, the jihadist-friendly National Lawyers Guild, and the grievance-mongering Council on American-Islamic Relations. They received money from Democracy Alliance as well. And in fact, Valerie Jarrett met with Gara LaMarche for long hours meetings over the last couple of years. Back in November 29, he visited the White House 9 times, and also he's listed 32 times in the logs. He also donated $18 million to the Atlantic Philanthropies to a Chicago charity headed by Valerie Jarrett. So we know that these ties run extremely deep. I mean, their investments that they tout are Media Matters, which is a Hillary Clinton propaganda media site, Organizing for America, Obama's Foot Soldiers, Committee on States, committed to the success of state-based networks to further progressive causes, People's Action, a network of grassroots organizations with a fierce reputation for direct action, Progress Now, a network of state partner organizations filling a critical role in progressive infrastructure, Color of Change, the organization that attacked Glenn Beck when he was at Fox, that is possibly behind the attempts to remove Bill O'Reilly, even though the inner workings of Fox News, the upper management, has now shifted to Murdoch's sons, and that could be why he's not getting the deflection shield that Beck had on his side. But they're doing more than just attacking Trump rallies with these little violent foot soldiers, and they fundraise for campaigns for different candidates. The chairman, Rob McKay, his father is a Republican, owns Taco Bell. He's the heir to Taco Bell, but he turned very hardcore liberal. He's very, very progressive. Vice Chair Anna Berger, former SEIU. Huffington Post wrote, "I love SEIU, but it's time for me to find a new path forward. While I continue to work with SEIU as a consultant in the years ahead, finding economic solutions for working people, I will still have space to work in the broader progressive movement." That's Anna Berger, former SEIU's going away statement. She is dubbed the Queen of Labor, so she's a member of Democracy Alliance. Other members, obviously George Soros from USA Today. Quote, "The alliance, aligned with billionaire financier George Soros, also is weighing building a pool of money that can be deployed for rapid response work by other liberal groups on an array of issues such as challenging the Trump administration on deportation of undocumented immigrants." His son, Jonathan Soros, is involved. Ann Bartley, formerly of the Rockefeller Family Fund. You know who the Rockefellers are. Go through history on that one. We also have Susie Tompkins Buell, who the Daily Cause didn't really like. But we also got Rob Reiner, you know, Meathead from All in the Family. Steve Gluckenstern, he's the owner of the Islanders. Noel Beasley, head of SEIU Amalgamated Bank. Andy Goldman, Sol Goldman's daughter as well. Her father owned the Chrysler Building. Philip Munger, son of Charles Munger, vice chairman of Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. I mean, the list goes on and on. These people are getting together. They're playing towards those disenfranchised, the little man, as they like to call them, while they are elitist. And it's a collection of unions, collection of government groups, collection of hedge fund managers, venture capitalists, all looking to destroy the conservative movement in media, to destroy the conservative movement in government and campaigns. And we're going to have more on this on the other side of the break. Stick with me.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
You know, it's amazing to me. We just went through the foot soldiers, Crime and Think, their black bloc methods and how they are attacking people. We went through the financing, how they receive funding, and the funding mechanism that is set to destroy conservatism in media, in candidacies, in rallies, in just across the board with Soros involved. No surprise there. And why do they do all this? These elitists are out there playing on the ignorance of those they try to control. They want to pretend they're for the little man, and while they live their big, lavish lifestyle without a shred of self-awareness of how hypocritical they actually are. You know, many that are in the Democrat political machine are touting the statue of the little girl on Wall Street. You know, that one that, oddly enough, looks like the former IRS commissioner John Koskin's love child. God, look at the face. I mean, it's not even a cute girl. But she's standing up defiantly to the bull, which that's actually becoming a lawsuit of copyright infringement because it takes the bull, the symbol of the bull, and adds a whole new meaning to the reasoning behind making the bull. So it's almost kind of like, you know, Vanilla Ice getting sued for using Under Pressure. It's like, oh yeah, but mine goes dun 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 dun, and theirs goes dun 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 dun. No, no, sorry, you took something and you added your end to it and changed it, but you infringed on the copyright of the original intent of the material involved. So you've got Kristen Gillibrand over there. She's going, I love the statue of the little girl. Well, she should, because she was funded by the exact same company that made the statue, State Street Global Advisors. I mean, Elizabeth Warren's out there taking a picture with it, and she's out there going, look at me, I'm standing with the strong girl power statue. This little tyke out here was made by Wall Street State Global Advisors. You know what's really even funny of it? Of its 28-person leadership team, only 5 are women, according to the company website. So much for girl power. But what is their end game? Do they want complete and utter socialism? Because that's not really working out so well in Venezuela. Does anyone not remember the collapsing of the socialism and communist regime's weight on the Soviet Union? I mean, do they not remember the, we want blue jeans and we want Nikes, and they watched Dallas and they thought America, everyone in America lived the Dallas TV show lifestyle, and that's ultimately what gave them an insight into capitalism, causing them, along with the fact that the Soviet Union bankrupted itself, to have an uprising and a longing for capitalism? Does anyone remember all that? So what's interesting now is how the left, they're waxing ecstatic over how the totalitarian regime's control of resources actually makes you healthy. What? This was actually in a Cosmo article a few years ago. Between 1990 and 1995, thanks to the collapse of the Soviet Union, Cuban people were forced to alter their entire lifestyles. They couldn't afford petrol, so the government provided them with bicycles. People started walking everywhere. Food was also in shorter supply. There was no supermarket aisle stuffed with junk food or wallets stuffed with money in which to buy it. In short, Cubans could no longer afford to be fat. In that 5-year period, they lost an average of around 5 kilos per person, which is over 11 pounds. As a result of people getting slimmer, they also lived longer. Unless they were executed, but with fewer Cubans dying of diabetes and heart disease, all of which is fantastic. Except it didn't last. I mean, seriously, that is from Cosmo. I mean, it's unbelievable to me that these people are touting a totalitarian regime as being the reason for a healthy diet. You know, and then you've got this idiot out of England who basically said the same thing about North Korea.
The child obesity program that was white paper was out, and it changed massively from the white paper to what's been implemented. But there are other pressures going on, and the only way is either moan about it from the outside and not try and do anything, or get about and do it from the inside. And it is, you know, if you think of the two countries in the world that have got a handle on obesity, what do you think they are? Which two countries?
Do you know what? I'm stumped there. I don't know.
North Korea and Cuba.
Right.
See, they're quite controlling on behavioural change. So, yeah, there is a place it will have to be worked, and you have to get people to buy into it. And the reality is that
People are starving in North Korea, aren't they? They're not obese because they haven't got any food.
Well, they're obese, exactly. But there were sanctions and everything else. But the example is it's behavioural change.
I mean, it's unbelievable that that's how they view socialism and totalitarianism. I mean, we should all get on the Venezuelan diet because constant worry about your future and whether or not you're going to be alive will kill your appetite, along with the lack of food resources. So you'll be dropping the pounds real quick. But I mean, what is their end goal? Is that it? Or is it a one world government controlling the resources and rationing them out? Then how much food is the right amount of food for the government to give to you? If everybody's going to be on the equal playing field, your family's going to get the same amount of resources. Or maybe they won't. Maybe we'll just all die hoping we can live off of what the government decides what is good for us. Because we're only going to be able to decide what's good for our family. No one else is going to be able to decide that for us. And on Easter Sunday, we get these socialist, social justice warriors, these anti-capitalists attacking Christians for not wanting government programs. I mean, Jordan Yule actually tweeted today, Republicans celebrate Jesus, but somehow forgot that they were trying to take healthcare, food stamps, and Meals on Wheels away from the poor. Of course, I had to respond to say, that's because charity comes directly from person to those in need, not through government coercion, government mandate, and redistribution programs. I had to further follow it up with, the loaves and fishes weren't extracted via government withholding and given to those who filed forms in triplicate who are in need waiting weeks for governmental approval, okay? So that is how they're viewing socialism. They view us as self-reliant, as being anti-charitable, even though Republicans and most notably Christians give more charity than a Democrat can ever be calculating as giving, as done through study after study. We got to remember that government is going to take care of everyone, and Jesus would have liked government, even though he didn't. I'm Adrian Slade. Find me on conservativelibrary.com or adriansladeshow.com. We'll see you next week.